Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Our entire island has been devastated by this, but none more so than the individuals who are still looking for loved ones or know that they've already lost their loved ones.
The death toll from last week's devastating fires in Maui have climbed to 96, making it the deadliest wildfire in over a century in the United States. And officials fear the actual death toll may be far higher. We'll go to Maui for the latest, then speak to the climate scientist, Michael Mann.
And we simply wouldn't be seeing this in the absence of human-caused warming, in the absence of the climate crisis, the warming of the planet from the burning of fossil fuels.
And then to Ecuador, where the country's still in shock after the assassination of presidential hopeful Fernando Villavicencio.
This is a political crime which has the character of terrorism, and we do not doubt that this murder is an attempt to sabotage the electoral process.
We'll speak to the Ecuadorian economist Andres Arauz. He's running for vice president of Ecuador in Sunday's elections, which are scheduled to proceed as planned. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Hawaii, the death toll from the Maui wildfire has reached 96, continues to rise, making it the deadliest U.S. wildfire in a century. Family resource centers have been set up to help survivors desperately trying to locate their missing loved ones. This is a Maui resident who said this weekend 9 of his relatives are still missing.
I cannot describe what my feeling right now. So it's all. I can feel it underneath me. So when I see the Lahaina town itself, I cannot describe how it feels. I guess.
The blaze decimated the historic town of Lahaina as it spread at a rate of a mile a minute, propelled by wind gusts from Hurricane Dora of up to 81 miles per hour. A lawsuit filed against Hawaiian Electric Industries alleges electrified power lines blown over by the high winds helped the wildfire spread at such a rapid pace and that the company should have de-energized their power lines after a high wind alert. We'll have more on Hawaii and the climate crisis going to Maui after headlines. In Niger, the ruling military junta said they'll prosecute deposed President Mohamed Bazoum for high treason following his ouster last month in the July 26 coup. The U.S. warned last week of the deteriorating health of Bazoum and two of his family members that have been held in the presidential palace in Niamey with dwindling supplies of food and no electricity. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Islamic scholars say Niger's coup leaders are open to meeting with ECOWAS in hopes of coming to a diplomatic resolution after the West African bloc last week said it had activated a standby force for possible military intervention. Over the weekend, a delegation of the Nigerian military traveled to Guinea, where they met with Mamadi Doumbouya, who is the interim president of Guinea after leading a military coup in October of 2021. He expressed solidarity with Niger's coup.
As far as the Republic of Guinea is concerned, we are Pan-African. When our people have problems, we're always there and will always be there. And that's what happened with my brothers in Mali, Burkina, and Niger. As far as we're concerned, we're the only ones who can find solutions to our problems.
Pro-coup Nigerians have continued to protest against any outside military action. On Friday, they rallied outside the French army base in the capital, Niamey. 6 asylum seekers have died after a boat carrying dozens of migrants to the UK sank in the English Channel. Several people are still missing, while 55 were rescued in efforts largely led by French coastal authorities. The mayor of the port city of Calais, Natacha Bouchard, slammed British policy, which they say saddles France with handling the mounting crisis at the maritime border.
We are systematically being fooled by the British government. When are we going to bang our fists on the table? When are we going to threaten them with action so that they can put an end to it? Calais is not the border of England. They don't want to do the dirty work of saying, I accept or I do not accept refugees in my territory.
This comes as two refugees, including a baby, have died after another boat capsized off the coast of Tunisia. Here in the United States, a 3-year-old toddler has died while on a migrant bus that was on the way to Chicago from Texas. The child's death is first reported by Texas authorities since Republican Governor Greg Abbott began busing thousands of asylum seekers to Democrat-led cities last year, including Chicago and New York. CBS News reported the child was from Venezuela. Taiwan's Vice President William Lai defiantly declared Taiwan will not back down to Chinese threats as he visited the U.S. in what has been billed as a transit stop on his way to Paraguay's presidential inauguration this week. China vowed to take forceful and resolute measures in response to his stop in the U.S., which Beijing considers a challenge to its sovereignty over the territory. He is a front-runner in Taiwan's January presidential election. He spoke during a lunch with supporters in New York City Sunday.
Peace and security in the Taiwan Strait is not only Taiwan's problem, but rather an international issue that concerns all the countries of the world. When Taiwan is safe, the world is safe. When there's peace in the Taiwan Strait, there will be peace in the world.
In the occupied West Bank, mourners marched in a funeral procession Friday for 23-year-old Mahmoud Jarad, who was shot dead during an Israeli raid in the Tul Karim refugee camp. At least 8 others were injured. This is Mahmoud Jarad's mother.
He was ambitious, like other youngsters, what the youngster wants, to have a home, marry. Everything disappeared.
A group of over 1,500 academics from around the world, including Israel and the United States, signed a statement condemning Israel's, quote, regime of apartheid, unquote, against Palestinians. They write, quote, there cannot be democracy for Jews in Israel as long as Palestinians live under a regime of apartheid, unquote. In other news from the region, Palestinian officials, including President Mahmoud Abbas, welcomed their first Saudi Arabian ambassador. Nayef al-Sadari will serve as an envoy to Palestine and consul general in Jerusalem. This comes as the U.S. has been pushing for the normalization of relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. Jordan enacted what's been described by rights groups as a draconian cybercrime law. The legislation, which will go into effect in a month, includes fines and even prison for posting content deemed to be immoral, insulting religion, or undermining national unity. It also punishes people who publish names or pictures of police officers and bans certain measures that protect a user's identity. A statement issued by over a dozen rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, said, quote, vague provisions open the door for Jordan's executive branch to punish individuals for exercising their right to freedom of expression, forcing the judges to convict citizens in most cases. The UN said Friday it's completed the transfer of more than 1 million barrels of oil from a decaying supertanker off Yemen's Red Sea coast.
This is a major disaster averted. It was a ticking time bomb, as many called it, and it could have destroyed hundreds of thousands of livelihoods. It could have affected the shipping up the Red Sea towards the Suez Canal. It could have destroyed biodiversity and fisheries for a quarter of a century.
In Pakistan, Anwar-ul-Haq Kakar, a senator from Balochistan province, has been named as caretaker prime minister ahead of elections, which are supposed to take place within 90 days following the dissolution of the National Assembly last week. But it's unclear if Pakistan will be ready for elections by November after the outgoing government of Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif approved a new census, which the Election Commission will now have to rush to translate into new boundaries. Observers are warning a delay in elections could hand more control to the military, which already exerts significant power in Pakistani politics. Former Prime Minister Imran Khan, who's accused the military of going after him, is imprisoned and barred from running for office on corruption charges that he's denied. In Argentina, voters cast their ballots in a crowded primary Sunday. Far-right populist Javier Milei emerged as the surprising lead, receiving the largest number of votes, about 30%. The 52-year-old is an admirer of former U.S. President Trump, who's vowed to shutter Argentina's central bank, opposes sex education, wants to facilitate the purchasing of guns, and is a climate crisis denier. Milei has served in Argentina's Congress since 2021. He addressed supporters Sunday.
We are facing the end of the caste model, that model based on that atrocity which says that where there is a need, a right is born, but forgets that someone has to pay for that right, whose ultimate manifestation is that aberration called social justice.
Argentina's current president, Alberto Fernandez, is not seeking re-election as Argentina faces a worsening economic crisis with soaring inflation. The general election is scheduled for October. In Ecuador, presidential candidates participated in a debate Sunday night where they vowed to address violence and security issues following the assassination of the presidential hopeful Fernando Villavicencio last week. An empty podium stood in his place while candidates held a moment of silence before starting the debate. Construya, or the Build political party, has opted for journalist Christian Zarita to replace Villavicencio as presidential candidate, reversing its previous decision to go for Villavicencio's vice presidential nominee, Andrea Gonzalez. The election is scheduled for this Sunday, August 20th. Meanwhile, Ecuadorian authorities have transferred a powerful gang leader accused of threatening Villavicencio before the candidate was killed to a maximum security prison. Some 4,000 soldiers and police were deployed to help relocate Adolfo Macias from a low-security jail. This comes as Villavicencio's widow blamed the state for her husband's murder.
They did not protect him as they should have protected him. The state was in charge of Fernando's security. The state is directly responsible for the murder of my husband, Fernando Villavicencio. The state still has to give many answers about everything that happened. His personal guards did not do their job. I do not want to think that they sold my husband to be murdered in this infamous way.
After headlines, we'll go to Quito, Ecuador, to speak with the vice presidential candidate, Andres Arauz. Back in the United States, Kansas police raided a local newspaper, the Marion County Record, and the home of its publisher and co-owner, Joan Mayer, Friday, seizing computers and other materials. One day later, on Saturday, the 98-year-old Joan Mayer died. The paper blamed the police action, which it said, quote, stressed beyond her limits. The raid reportedly stemmed from a dispute between the newspaper and a local restaurant owner who accused the Marion County Record of illegally obtaining information about a drunk driving incident. But it appears the newspaper had also been actively investigating the Marion Police Chief Gideon Cody after sexual misconduct charges at a previous job in Kansas City. Details about that investigation were on a computer seized in the raid. Now, over 30 news organizations and press groups have published an open letter to Marion's police chief blasting the raid, writing, quote, newsroom searches and seizures are among the most intrusive actions law enforcement can take with respect to the free press and the most potentially suppressive of free speech, unquote. The group Reporters Without Borders said the seizure may violate federal law. A federal judge in New York ordered Sam Bankman-Fried to jail after revoking bail for the disgraced founder of collapsed cryptocurrency exchange FTX. He'd been under house arrest at his parents' home in Palo Alto, California, on the Stanford campus while awaiting his October trial on fraud and money laundering charges. The judge said Bankman-Fried twice tried to interfere with witnesses in his case, including giving reporters documents Bankman-Fried is accused of using deposits in FTX for real estate purchases, political and charitable donations. Attorney General Merrick Garland named David Weiss, the federal prosecutor investigating Hunter Biden, to special counsel. Prosecutors said they could not come to a new plea deal to settle tax and gun charges against the president's son after a judge rejected a previous deal last month. The latest twist significantly increases the chance of Hunter Biden going on trial as President Biden campaigns for re-election. In Georgia, Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis has called former Georgia Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan and journalist George Chidi to testify Tuesday before the grand jury investigating Donald Trump's efforts to overturn Georgia's 2020 election. Chidi is believed to have stumbled upon a meeting of Trump-supporting fake electors at Georgia's state capitol. He was thrown out of that meeting. A fourth indictment against former President Trump and his co-conspirators is widely expected from Georgia this week, with possibly as many as 12 people indicted. And in other news from Georgia, activists campaigning to get a public referendum on Cop City has gotten 80,000 signatures, surpassing the minimum number needed to get the measure on the November ballot. The vote to stop Cop City has set a stretch goal of 100,000 signatures before it submits the petition next Monday. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, we go to Maui, where the death toll from the devastating fires have climbed to 96, with the number expected to be far higher in the deadliest wildfire in over a century in the United States. Stay with us.
History. Is it as easy as this? Plausible deniability. I swear I'm in a head.
In a Dying Field by the Beths. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll from the Maui wildfires has reached nearly 100 and is expected to climb far higher in what is now considered the deadliest wildfire in the United States in a century. It's clear the fire is Hawaii's worst natural disaster. The blaze decimated the historic town of Lahaina, which once served as the capital of the Hawaiian kingdom, as it spread at a rate of a mile every minute, propelled by wind gusts from Hurricane Dora hundreds of miles away. A lawsuit filed against the utility, Hawaiian Electric, alleges electrified power lines blown over by the high winds helped the wildfire spread at such a rapid pace, and that the company should have de-energized these power lines after a high wind alert. This is a survivor of the fire named Akinezeva, describing how her family got stuck in traffic while trying to escape the ferocious flames. She was with her husband and three kids, age 15, 13, and 9. They recorded part of their experience on a cell phone as the blue skies around them turned gray, then black.
This here is where we were at before we made the decision, because this is the electrical that lit up in flames. So I was, that's my husband in the passenger seat, because he kept getting in and out to hose down small fires that were starting.
Just from our parking stall,
to the entrance of our apartment complex. It went from blue skies to gray to black. And all we seen was embers from fire that we had no idea what's going on. There was no siren, nothing. And I mean, it was just heartbreaking seeing our community, my neighbors, like lots of elderly people trying to make it down the stairs just to get into their car. And out of nowhere, this fire jumped from the parking structure over to a tree and then onto an electric post. By then, we were right next to that electric post. And as a mom, I mean, so many things are going through my mind. Cars are panicking. And I have it on video where my son was, you know, in the video. He's like, "Oh, mom, it's hot. I can feel it." So instantly I'm telling my husband, "I need a reverse. I need a reverse. We need to get out and run. Everything's coming so quick. We could feel the heat. It's sitting in our car." And out of nowhere, I just hear banging on this window. And everything's dark, so I look to my left, and I'm literally right next to this car where this grandmother is yelling for help. And she's just telling me, "Please help me, I have a baby." And I just, you know, at that time, I'm like, what do I do? So of course, I jump out, I tell my husband, "You tend to the grandma, I'm grabbing the baby." I run out, I run around her car, open up the back, the baby's on her side, right behind her. I reach over, I grab this baby. She was about 2.5, 3 years old. I grabbed her. She was sitting on a blanket. I wrapped her with the blanket, and I told my kids, "You guys run. Don't turn around and look for me." And my 9-year-old couldn't. She just kept telling me, "Mom, I can't. Please, Mom." This is the car where we saved the baby from. We took out running this way. Ran out this way, right here to the corner. There's a fence that Mona and my husband and the neighbor bent to get everybody to safety. We were all hiding behind this wall here. We run to the corner and we meet up with a few pets there, our neighbors. There's about a good 9 of us. We meet there and we just notice that we're at a dead end. We're at a dead end and we're just standing there. We have our backs to this building and we're looking at each other and we're like, you know, my son was like, "Oh, Mom, is this it?" And I mean, what do you tell your kids? You know, and I told my kids, you know, if it is, my husband told him, if it is, you know, thank you, Lord. Thank you, God. Thank you for my family. Oh, Lahaina's home. I mean, so many times I tell myself, I need to get off this rock. The moment I'm in the air, I'm homesick. I mean, being here on the other side of the island, I am grateful. I'm thankful that my brother and his wife opened their home to us. But just being here on this side of the island, I'm still homesick. Like, my heart is in Lahaina. I will always have a place in my heart for Lahaina. I mean, Lahaina's home, period.
That was Akinesi Vau, who escaped the fire in Lahaina town with her husband and her 3 kids, 15, 13, and 9. This weekend, relatives of the missing frantically search for any sign that their loved ones may still be alive. Maui County Mayor Richard Bisson described the scene in Lahaina in an interview with ABC News Sunday.
The closest thing I can compare it to is perhaps a war zone where maybe a bomb went off. It was cars in the street, doors open, you know, melted to the ground. Most structures no longer exist. And for blocks and blocks of this, I'm familiar with what it looked like growing up here on Maui, especially with my mom working at one of the restaurants there, the Pioneer Inn, for 17 years, and so it doesn't resemble anything that it looked like when I was growing up.
Meanwhile, many residents are asking why Hawaii's outdoor siren warning system, with about 80 alarms on the island of Maui alone, did not get activated to warn the residents about the fire. Hawaii Emergency Management Agency spokesperson told CNN, quote, nobody at the state and nobody at the county attempted to activate those sirens based on our records. It was largely a function of how fast the flames were moving. They were trying to coordinate response on the ground. Hawaii officials released a report last year that ranked which natural disasters residents would most likely be threatened by. The list included tsunamis, earthquakes, and volcanic eruptions. The risk of wildfires to human life was listed as low. This is Democratic U.S. Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii speaking Sunday.
I'm not going to make any excuses for this tragedy, but the Attorney General has launched a review of what happened with those sirens and some of the other actions that were taken. So that is happening. And there will be time enough, I would say, for those kinds of reviews and investigations to occur.
Hawaii Senator Hirono was speaking on CNN. For more, we go to Kula, Maui, to speak with Kalikoa Kiaio, a professor of Hawaiian Studies at the University of Hawaii, Maui College. We welcome you to Democracy Now! We were also going to be joined by another guest, but her uncle just died in hospital, which is an indication of the number of people. I mean, we're right now the number's at 96, but Professor, how much larger, based on your information, knowing friends, family, neighbors, do you think this number is going to go?
Ano ai Kavelina ana ya ukua pau Amy Democracy Now inoa Maui ne aloha. To answer your question, you know, unfortunately, what's you know, I myself, what I witnessed, and I myself, in understanding and discussing and talking with others intimate with that situation, as I was told by a high-ranking county official, you know, they hope and they don't expect it to reach as high as, you know, 400 to 500. But they would not be surprised. Now, I know that sounds outrageous and sounds high, but we do know there's still hundreds of residents and visitors who are still unaccounted for. So, you know, although we're slowly reaching 100, there are still many, many cars, burnt out cars, and many burnt out structures and homes and buildings that have yet to really be surveyed and looked at. So,
Professor Kaeo, can you talk about the fact that there were no warning sirens? I mean, and you've got this lawsuit now against the electric company. The idea, though it's not exactly clear what happened, that it's these power lines going down in this intense wind that sparked fires. Can you talk about the lack of preparedness?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's in one way, it is lack of preparedness, I guess, the intensity of the wind. And, you know, and people don't might not recognize that on Maui at that time, there were four major fires that were happening on Maui at that time, Lahaina just being one of them. The Lahaina fire, unfortunately, wasn't aerated. There have been fires in the past pretty pretty close to the, where the most of the damage occurred. It is very true. I know for a fact that I'm talking with people that I know who were startled, in fact, by the heat and the wind, and were very afraid and were, you know, kind of hunkered down in their apartments at that time, right in the heart of Lahaina. And it was only because of already feeling the heat that was approaching the building that in the very last moments that, you know, I personally know a story of a family, a single woman with her children who barely escaped. And really because she had a four-wheel drive truck and was able to kind of climb over, you know, certain parts of the streets and navigate away, and herself barely got out of there alive. And, you know, unfortunately, when she left the apartment and left behind her, she saw and witnessed the destruction and the burning, in fact, of the building and cars and people behind her. So, you know, and she herself said that there was no warning sign, no warning sounds, no one had come around. It was just basically their own instinct and you know, and because of feeling the heat that was coming with the wind. And it wasn't just the power of the wind, but it was the heat of the wind that really, you know, made them fear for their lives. And in the last moments, that really, you know, because of luck, sheer luck, was able to escape. And I can say specifically, the following morning, I was able to go by boat and walk right into the major area that had been destroyed. And what I saw was, in fact, many, many dozens and dozens of telephone poles underground, lines that were still, you know, burning and seemed to be alive. And you could still see the sparkings and so forth right on the street. And many of the homes and buildings, I mean, were destroyed to ashes. And so you could really see the intensity of the fire and the wind. And from, you know, from the accounts that I've heard from the people I've spoke to, as they said, it was as if the wind was on fire. It was as if charcoal itself was blowing. And so, you know, there were many people that I understand who were trapped in their cars also. And, you know, while contemplating, should they try to escape and run through the strong burning wind, or should they stay in their car? And, you know, I think perhaps because of the fear, because of the actual heat of the fire, of the winds, and many of them were unable to escape, you know, from the roads because of those power lines that, because of the strong winds that had fallen upon the streets and the roads, really prevented many people from escaping.
Professor Kaeo, you...